We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're listening to BuzzBeat Radio, your premier Charlotte Hornets show.
All right, welcome in episode 79 of BuzzBeat Radio. We've got plenty of Hornets basketball as usual to talk about in this episode. A little bit of a bipolar week for Charlotte. But we'll get into all of that. Don't forget, we are a proud member of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network and home of QueenCityHoops.com. I read a pretty good piece on Queen City Hoops last night, actually, about, hey, what should we do with Marvin Williams here? Should he stay in the starting lineup? Should we look at somebody else to take his place? So go check that piece out if you haven't already. And then SportsChannel8.com. Don't forget about our friends over at SportsChannel8. You can follow them on Twitter at Sports Channel 8, the number 8. On that note, BG, what is happening in the triangle?
Nothing, just the Zion Williams highlight factory here at the moment, the center of the basketball universe, it almost feels like. I've covered two Duke games now this year. I was on hand last night for the Eastern Michigan game, which was just an onslaught. I don't know if you guys haven't watched this dude play a basketball game yet. I would get busy on it. It's pretty absurd. But other than that, just a lot of basketball. I'm up in Asheville this weekend for a wedding, which will be cool. So looking forward to a little vacation. I'm off work tomorrow, and I don't know. I set up my DVR this morning to tape a bunch of basketball games this weekend while I'm gone, including the Hornets game. So how about you? Everything good in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, everything's good. Everything's good. Richie, I know you're going to run to something, but it looks like you're still here. Richie's got to go take care of something. But what's going on down in your world?
Not a whole lot. Beckett is taking up a whole lot of my time. Like I was talking to you guys beforehand, sleep schedule seems to be very inconsistent. Last night he was up at midnight, just wide-eyed, and we don't know exactly why he was awake at that time. I think that's just baby schedules are definitely inconsistent. So lack of sleep is definitely hitting me at this time. I woke up and I was just like, I need to go to Starbucks and get me a venti coffee. So exactly what I did this morning.
Before we let you go, have you seen any Hornets basketball in the last week? Like 1 second.
Yes, it's been on. It's been on in the background. But for me to actually like take notes, no, I can't do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, and then, all right, before we let you go, really, this is the last question. Give us your one thought. Like, what's the one thing that stuck out to you in this past week? Because there's a lot to unpack here, I think, in this episode for the Hornets. But what's the one thing that sticks out to you among anything else?
Well, see, I didn't see the game against the Cavs, so I feel like my thoughts are a little bit more positive than what
you're lucky, man.
Yeah, so I didn't see any of that. I don't really have a kind of one thought. I wish I almost saw the Cavs game so that I can kind of weigh in on that. So no, I really don't have anything enlightening here.
Cool. Well, yeah. I mean, there's, like I said, if you watch the Detroit and the Philly game, I think you're like, man, this team is really starting to hum offensively. It's kind of coming together, and then in Cleveland, oh boy. Yeah, we'll get to that one later. But yeah. Anyways, we thought we'd do kind of what we did last week, and start with the Twitter questions. We had two pretty good ones this week. I really liked the first one especially. But BG, to answer your question, no real updates in my life. Thanksgiving's next week. I'm moving to Charlotte on the 27th of November. So if I could like turn the computer around and show you guys, there's just boxes everywhere. So, nothing real exciting. I'm trying to catch as much college hoops that's on the TV. All the preseason tournaments are starting, all that good stuff. Yeah. Other than that, it's just a lot of packing. But appreciate you asking. All right, well, let's jump into these Twitter questions. The first one comes from Tyler Pelham. Tyler's, I know he's a fan. He interacts with us pretty regularly on Twitter. He's at Tyler_Pelham, P-E-L-L-O-M. You can give him a follow. His question is, if you guys could dump one contract from the current roster, which one would it be? I'm going to let you take this one first, BG.
Yeah, this is sort of a no-brainer, right? I mean, it's the most expensive and it's the longest in terms of years. It's the it's the lengthiest contract on the books. Only two full seasons down of it, and that would be the Nick Batum summer of 2016 extravaganza contract, which still has, I'm pulling up the numbers right now. Nick Batum, $24 million this season, $25.5 million next season, and then a player option in 2020-2021 of $27.1 million. That is, in my opinion, the no-brainer one to dump. Although, I don't know, maybe you could make a case for like Bismack, his contract, I suppose, too. 17 this year, player option for 17 next year. But no, I'll take even though Batum's a good player and he helps the team win games, but if I had to dump one, that would be the most obvious choice.
I agree with you. I think it is Batum. Through 2021, as you said, owed over $50 million, not counting this season. But so, yes, that's the answer. I think we agree here. But I will throw out just a few, and we're going to talk about this player later. This contract's starting to look really stinky. And I wouldn't say that we would have said that at all this time last year. I think we thought maybe the amount of centers we had on the roster this time last season, we've been like, this is a lot of money to dole out to another center. Mm-hmm. But Cody Zeller at 14.4 next year and then 15.4 in 2021 with no options. Those are just that's a straight deal. That's not great. And Cody Zeller, something else that hadn't been great on the court this season, Cody Zeller, not great. So I think that one you could – and probably a little easier, obviously, to get off of. And then the other one I would say that I think the Hornets could look at moving because it's just shorter is Marvin Williams.
Right,
His player option, $15 million next year, which, yes, he's going to opt into that 365 days of the year.
Yeah.
I think if you get off that, it really helps you too from a cap perspective. But, I think we both agree – on Batum. All right, second question here.
Honestly, why not Kemba Walker? I'm just sick of him being so good and valuable. Like, it's almost annoying. He's just kind of a show-off, Like, look at me continuously outperforming my contract and expectations and being a super good bargain deal. Maybe that's what's holding this franchise back.
That is a train of thought, BG.
I feel like
with all this moving going on, I don't want to beat my head into the wall anymore than I have to. But getting off Kemba and seeing what you get in return certainly it sparks the conversation.
I say that mostly in jest. He's awesome. And glad to have him here.
There's no question. And look, let's just see where the season goes, right? Like, we could be here in just a few weeks with a tough schedule coming up for Charlotte. We could be in a situation where we're having this more seriously. But, this is like Groundhog Day at this point with Kim contract. Second question from our good friend Patrick Connor. You can follow him on Twitter. Let me pull it up real quick. At Patrick Connor 7, his question is, drum roll. We need a drum roll for this one. Should the Hornets sign Melo? So when Richie tweeted out the other day from the BuzzBeat account, send us your questions, like the odds on getting this question. And no offense, Patrick Connor, it's a good question. We should talk about it. The odds would have been like minus 500, right? That this question was going to be one of them. BG, I already know what your answer is, but go ahead and give your reasoning.
It is definitely no. So just real quickly here, Carmelo's played 294 minutes this season with Houston. He's not the only reason they're underperforming, right? We all agree on that. But Houston, minus 63 points in those 294 minutes, worst on the team. Offense scoring 102 points per 100, that's bad. Defense allowing 111 points per 100, that's very bad. Offense and defense both get better when he gets off the court. Minutes with Chris Paul and James Harden, those three together, 37 minutes, 99 points per 100 possessions. That's very bad. Defensively, 114 points per 100 possessions. And here's the big thing where it comes to Carmelo is, what is his actually like one plus skill that he still has? Like seriously, like what it's, cause it's not spot up shooting. He's shooting 31% on threes off the catch this season. He's shooting 29% on wide open three-pointers this season. And he's shooting under 36% on pull-up twos. So, like, tell me what it is. You know, like, what is the – and, like, those pull-up twos, no one even cares. Like, no one's going to, like, you know, run an offense so Carmelo Anthony can go score 0.7 points per possession. You know what I mean? Right. Like, that offense doesn't exist anymore. And I even think on a second unit, it's not even worth it. Look, Carmelo Anthony's a great player. He's a Hall of Famer. The thought of, you know, having a little extra buzz around the team and seeing him in a Hornets uniform, I guess that's kind of cool. But no. He's not a very good player at this point in his career. He's regressed. It's what people do in year 16 usually, unless their name is LeBron James. And that specter continues to sort of like hangover Carmelo's career and sort of cloud, man, almost every accomplishment or failure he's ever had. It's interesting, the juxtaposition between those two. So no, my answer is no. He does basically nothing to help you win basketball games at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that. You know, your question, the question you posed about like what is his discernible skill, his one asset at this point, it's hard to come up with an answer. I think if he was a and I don't have his isolation numbers right in front of me, but if his isolation numbers were solid, you know, even above average, just above average, I think that I could listen to some that make the case for him in Charlotte a little bit more, because I think he could serve a purpose on the second unit. But I just on the eye test, I don't think his ISO numbers are good. He's still taking a lot of, if he's still taking as many mid-range shots as he was in Houston, like get him out of where they literally scald you.
if
you take that shot, you know, imagine what he's going to do somewhere else. Defensively, obviously, it's a disaster. The only thing he could bring to the Hornets is a guy who you could give the ball to late in games, and you know, at least he could go take a shot, right? Take a half decent, like isolation mid bricky. I mean, you know, it wouldn't be a great shot, but like, that's the problem with this offense. We can talk about this more later. We rely on a 5'8 speedy point guard to create his own shot every single time down the floor. So, like, that's the one thing Carmelo could bring, is somebody who can throw the ball and you know he's going to be able to create and get off his own shot. But those shots aren't going in. So, you know, what good is it really doing? So, yes, the answer is here is no. Now, I want to pose this question as a follow-up to you, BG. What would you put the odds at that right now that Michael, because I could see Charlotte doing this. I just could. They want to win, number one. You can talk yourself into Melo helping you some way, somehow. You just can. Somebody will do it, right?
Yeah.
And from a marketing perspective, which is always kind of at the top of the food chain for the Hornets, a small market team trying to bring in a few extra dollars. Like, what would you put the odds at that this actually does happen?
Yeah, still low, although I think Carmelo is a Team Jordan guy too. Am I correct on that? So, I mean, there's that as a small added bonus, you know, to the connection, I suppose. I would still say low. Like, I can't think of, you know, exact – and I guess the Hornets do technically have a roster spot open too, right, that they could – Yeah. I need to pull up the balance sheet and just see like how close they are to the tax line. I don't actually have that right in front of me, but like
they are, just while you're on it, they're $3.4 million and some pennies.
Yeah.
Under the tax. So
they can sign into the minimum. Yeah.
Easily.
If that's the case, you know, I guess that increases the odds a little bit more. I'd still say a 1 out of 10 chance, 2 out of 10 chance. Like I can't 1 out of 5. Like I think something, you know, 10 to 20% chance at the best, and probably lower than that.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I think it's about 30% chance that this – I mean, I don't know how quickly this is going to move for Carmelo, but he's parted ways officially with the Rockets as of actually just a few minutes ago, which means that, you know, the Rockets wanted to trade him, so they didn't have to take the cap hit.
Right.
But now they got to take the cap hit, so they're, I guess, waiving him. So if you couldn't find a trade partner, you know – I don't know for Carmelo. It's just kind of sad where it's gotten to at this point. It really is.
Yeah, it is. He was a great player. Just an awesome player. A totally awesome player. You know, he averaged 20-plus points for 14 seasons. He was the centerpiece on some good teams in Denver and a good team in New York. 3 gold medals. A scoring title. 2013 national championship at Syracuse. Like, dude's got a resume that's pretty damn impressive. And if not for like LeBron sort of running the last decade and a half of basketball, we'd probably think even more highly of Carmelo as sort of like an amazing, franchise hub cornerstone player. But this is like I said, most players tend to regress as they hit their mid 30s, except for LeBron, who just, you know, goes for 44 and near triple double last night against Portland. So,
yeah.
The way the world works, I guess.
Well, to put a bow on this segment, which BG, I know you don't, and I really don't enjoy talking about it that much, but I know that people want to hear us talk about it, right? So we will. Yeah. Here's why I think there is a chance this happens, because this is a team well documented that wants to make the playoffs as bad as any team in the entire league, right? And they're $3.4 million. Away from under the luxury tax line. They have a sizable, almost $8 million trade exception.
Yeah.
But they can't really use it
to
bring anything back without getting off money. Because, again, that's going to have to count towards your cap, whatever you bring back. So, really, the $3.4 million number is the one to focus on. If you want to add to this roster, which I do think the Hornets desperately need to, if there's any way possible for them to do it, you got to do it at a very, very, very cheap price. And I guess my thing is just like, what better roll of the dice at a very probably low risk proposition than Carmelo Anthony?
Yeah.
You know, you have no ties to him. If you throw him the prorated minimum starting tomorrow, you can waive him and eat that money. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And it's cheap. So that's why I think there is a chance this happens. Somebody in that front office, in the ownership group, is going to make a case. For Carmelo Anthony, I am confident of that.
The irony being that like Melo, probably decreases, in terms of RPM and wins added and lost and stuff like that. Like he would probably slightly regress Charlotte's odds of making the playoffs. Like if signed, because he's such a negative at this point of his career. But that those aren't. If someone's going to try to make a case for Carmelo, they're going to bring up all the bona fides that he has over the last two decades, as opposed to being the fact that like he is sort of a negative player at this point of his career. I guess the prorated veterans minimum, it'd be a little under $2 million now at this point. I would imagine somewhere in those whereabouts. Like, look, I wouldn't hate it if they brought Carmelo in. I mean, it would at least, like I said, bring a little bit of attention, but like, I just don't think that guy helps win basketball games anymore. I don't think he fits the offensive profile of the Hornets and what they're trying to do. And it's just like, if you want to have a guy to stand out there and miss 70% of his three pointers, like you're already paying Marvin Williams $15 million to do that. So
right.
Like why spend another, $2 million on another guy from drafted in the mid-aughts to come in and brick a bunch of 25 footers for you.
And this is the last question that I'm going to ask you about this topic, but it just came to me, and I have to ask it now.
Yeah.
Who would you rather have on this on your team, the Hornets? Dwight Howard or Carmelo Anthony?
Carmelo, not Carmelo. Right. No, I don't even care. It's Carmelo. It's totally Carmelo. I never want to like relive the Dwight mirror ever again.
Oh, I 100% agree with you. I was just making sure you shared the same.
And I at least enjoy the personality of Carmelo, right? Like I sort of enjoy. I like Carmelo. I pull for him. It sucks that he's at the stage where. His career is sort of slipping through his fingers, or you know, maybe even dissipating at a faster rate than slipping through one's fingers. But yeah, I don't want to ever follow a team where Dwight Howard is like a featured element of the roster ever again.
I completely agree with you. Just wanted to make sure. All right. Well, let's get into it here. Let me pull up my handy dandy spreadsheet. Before we get into the games, like I said, we're going to review the Philly game, the Detroit game, the Cleveland game, all on the road for Charlotte. But real quick, just kind of a look at where the Hornets stand, really from just a skeleton perspective, versus the rest of the league offensively, defensively. Offensive rating, 113.7. That's fifth in the league, even after the Cleveland game. But you got to remember, a lot of the late game stats. I use cleaning the glass, like I've said in the past. So a lot of the late game stats from that Cleveland game, obviously thrown out, as that was a blowout. Defensive rating for Charlotte, 108.4. That's 14th best in the NBA. Mm-hmm. So they're above average right now in both marks. PG, I'm going to give you an offensive stat that I look at that really concerns me. And then let's talk about defense a little bit more, because there's a lot that concerns me defensively about the Hornets.
Yeah.
The one offensive stat that I circled that is very, very concerning for me, and I don't know how you fix it. I don't think you can fix it. Right now, Charlotte, shooting the ball at the rim, 59%. That's 26th best in the NBA. Not great. Field goals attempted at the rim, 23rd in the league at 34.8%. Yeah. I mean, this is really the same problem the defense is having. Honestly, you don't have a rim runner that can finish there. And then the guy who attempts by far the most shots at the rim, again, is 5'8", if you want to be probably a little smaller than that. And he's not having a great season at the rim. He's not getting to the foul line a lot. I don't know that this can be fixed, and I tweeted this out yesterday. You know, the Hornets just can't rely on the outside shot all season.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's with Dwight Howard. At least you get a faction of somebody that can finish around the basket, slow the game down because he's going to get fouled, you know, dunk when he catches it in there and nobody's flying at it. You know, the Hornets have nobody, not one person on this entire roster that's good at finishing at the rim, and that has got to be concerning.
You know, like Bridges to an extent, but even those looks are sort of like created differently, right? You know, like he's not going to like break down a defense and get to the rim. You know, it's got to be like, oh, they got a high low, or he got like a lob, right? It's different. It's different. Like the centers, they don't have a rim runner. And I mean, you know, Cody to an extent, but like you said, he's not a lob guy. He's been blocked 13 times already this season in the restricted area. Like I looked that up today. I mean, he's still shooting 65% in the restricted area, but like, which is, you know, it's okay. But, you know, it'd be nice if it was a little bit better. You know, it's like you said, it's tough because they're so reliant on two guys, really. And like you said, one of them is obviously Kemba, and he leads the team in 16.5 drives per game, which is a lot. He's not shooting on all of those. Obviously he passes, he's 2.2 assists per game out of drives, turnovers and stuff too. And then there's Tony Parker. So it's like you're relying on two small guys, one of whom was drafted in the year 2001 and is in year, you know, 18 in the NBA or whatever. But like you don't have anyone else that can like really break down a defense and get to the rim. You were probably sort of hoping Malik Monk would be that guy, but, and I'll get into this at some point, but like Malik, man, just a power outage from everywhere on the court for this guy shooting the ball. This season, and especially recently, the last handful of games. But yeah, look, it's a problem. Like, they don't have a lob guy. Batum doesn't get to the rim. Kemba does, but he misses half the time. Tony Parton get to the rim, he's shooting a decent number there, but like he can only play 19 minutes a game, you know? Like the hope would be someone like Batum or Lamb could step up and be a bigger attacking wing guard. But those guys, like, we talk about this all the time, Lamb's far more comfortable in the mid-range than he is getting all the way to the rim. And, yeah, like, it's just not Batum's game to put the ball in the deck and get to the hoop. It's in a nights when the jumper isn't falling, which it was not against Cleveland. Yeah, it's going to be a huge problem.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, how the Hornets really fix it. They got to find a way to create some better looks, just some cleaner looks outside of just having Kemba get going downhill off dribble penetration and playing out of that. And it was really kind of going back to my Carmelo point. I mean, this is one area he actually could help. He could probably take a little bit higher percentage of shots than the Hornets are getting from anybody else, not named, and good point about Parker, not named Kemba Walker or Tony Parker.
Yeah.
And like you said, Malik Monk, he's been terrible. I mean, that Cleveland game, holy moly.
Yeah, boy, dude, it's a problem. It's bad right now.
It's really, really bad. His effort is lackluster. He's going back to rookie Malik Monk, where he pounds it three or four times and then takes a contested almost fadeaway three. I mean, the one shot he made early in that game, I almost turned off the TV. I was like, terrible shot. He took two or three dribbles into the lane, backed his way out, got to the elbow area, and then took just an awful fadeaway mid-range jump shot, did nothing but net. Yeah. I mean, that's Malik Monk for you, right? And then the rest, he missed at least five wide open threes, and then the rest contested miss. I mean, go ahead.
Would you like me to spit out some numbers here on Malik here? Which is, so here's for the season. Malik Monk, 30% three-point shooting, 44% effective shooting this season overall. 32% shooting three-pointers off the catch, that's bad. 26% on three-pointers on pull-up threes, that's bad. 32% on three-point attempts without a defender and 4+ feet of him. So those are open or wide open threes. Again, 32%. He's shooting 15% on corner threes. 55% in the restricted area, which is okay, but only 20% in the paint outside, like the floater area, 20% field goal percent, 20% field goal in the paint, non-restricted area. And in the last three games, here's where it gets really bloody. These are the last three games, the ones we're talking about right now. 6 of 36 shooting from the field for Malik Monk. 19% effective shooting. 2 of 21 on three-pointers. 0 of 11 on three-point attempts after a catch. 2 of 9 on pull-up threes. 2 of 17 on open or wide-open three-pointers. 0 of 4 corner threes. And 2 of 6 at the rim. 0 of 6 in the paint, non-restricted area. These are all the money areas for this guy, and these are the money shots, and it's a problem. It's got to be better than this. And, like, the offense is still scoring pretty well with him out there, about 110 points per 100 possessions in a fair amount of minutes. But, like, these numbers have just got to be better. Like, the Hornets desperately need him to be a more reliable and efficient offensive player, and it is not there, and I'm not entirely sure now that the season's going how you get it on track.
Yeah, I don't either, because just judging by the eye test, the only time Malik is efficient at all offensively is when they run him off that stagger pin down action from the corner. And you have a trailing defender and a help defender that's probably sitting low, because we've talked about it. Malik can pass, he can set up his teammates. Yeah, he can score with some space, but if you ask him to do almost anything else on the floor, you can pretty much forget it. And that is, let's not say it yet, but I mean, it's a possibility. This is another lottery pick that's not going to work out.
Yeah.
Because he just doesn't. He brings so little else to the game, especially defensively, that if he's not really a plus offensively consistently, like I don't know if he's an NBA player. I mean, that is in play here.
Yeah.
He is not an NBA player. And that's pretty depressing.
And it sucks too, because like one of the reasons why when the Hornets drafted him, I felt sort of good about the pick was I thought, even though it was a little smallish of a backcourt, I thought he and Kemba sort of made sense together. And it just looked like that part, those two together just hasn't, like they've had moments, but for the most part, hasn't really gotten online together this season. Those guys have a negative net rating together. They did last season too, scoring only 104 points for 100 possessions with Malik Monk, Kemba Walker out there together about 138 minutes. And over the last three games, again, the ones we're talking about here, under 99 points for 100 possessions with Kemba and Malik Monk out there. Like they're using Tony Parker to close games. Like Tony Parker was trying to save their cookies as the game was slipping away in Detroit. You know, teams, the Pistons weren't even waiting. We should wait till this game to talk more about it. But like the Pistons weren't even waiting for a ball screen to come before they trapped Kemba at the end of the game. Like they were just sending a second defense. Like it was like a high school or college game where like one player is so much better than everyone else. And like, we just got to throw some junk defense at them to get the ball out of this guy's hands because literally no one else can make a play. And yeah, like they need one of Lamb, Batum, or Monk to be the guy. And just they both have lived. All three of those guys have limitations in ways that make it really, really tough. And it's unfortunate for Malik because like he's not without talent. Like the guy, he should be a good catch and shoot guy. And he has vision. Like some of his stuff should make sense, but the last three games, 19% effective shooting, only 44% effective shooting for the season. That's terrible. It's like Michael Carter Williams level numbers. You know what I mean? Right. Like this is just a total power outage. You cannot have these things happening.
It's
a problem. It's a really big problem.
The irony in how bad he's shooting the ball is, he has such a short memory, you know, which is what a score needs. You know, he needs that power to keep shooting and to keep going and to forget about the last shot. And Malik has that. I mean, it's pretty obvious. He'll chuck from anywhere at any time, but that's the irony in it. He like has that mental, I don't want to say killer instinct, cause I don't think killer instinct when I think Malik, but he can get past the last shot. Problem is, it's driving his efficiency down so rapidly right now because he keeps taking bad shots. Not all of them are bad, but a lot of them are. And he keeps missing. And, you just ask yourself, like, okay, what do we have here? A guy that he has a picture-perfect stroke, you know, has a little bit of twitch in terms of athleticism. He's a microwave scorer when he gets hot. Sees a few go in, he's going to keep firing away. But, you know, most of the time, he's an ineffective an inefficient shooter. So what do we really have?
I don't know. He's just, the thing is, you want to tell yourself, like, he's just 20. He missed a lot of, there's a big chunk of his career that he's missed in terms of development from injuries last season and in the summer league this year to being in Clifford's doghouse for big chunks of last season too. Yeah. You want to be patient with this guy. It's early in year two, but right now the returns, they are not promising.
They're certainly not. All right, defensively, BG, I got to run through it real quick. Like I said, 108.4 defensive rating. That's 14th in the league.
Yeah.
Hornets guarding the three-point line above the break threes for opponents. The Hornets are best in the NBA.
Opponents How about
are
that?
Only, it's crazy. Opponents are only shooting 30% from above the break. But here's the kicker. The Hornets are 29th in defending the corner. Opponents are shooting 45.7% from the corner. That is not a great sign for the defense. I mean, number one is we know this team doesn't have rim protection, and I'll get to that with a stat here in a minute. But teams are getting to the rim regularly, and teams are using that corner pretty much at will. And I would imagine that the numbers, if you run the numbers on how many of those attempts the opponents are taking from the corner or wide open, it's got to be tops of the league. The Hornets just have to help from so many different areas outside of just with your five, because Cody Zeller doesn't provide any rim protection. Bismack Biyombo is the only person on this roster that does, really. and you know he doesn't play very much.
And it's been a disaster every time he's played this season. Like his plus minus and the numbers are it's really bad. This team they can't score at all when Bismack Biyombo plays.
Right. So you know it's a pick your poison proposition here. You know it's nice that the Hornets are you know defending the 3-point line from the top, but you know when the defense is breaking down as drastically as it is. One of the things you're going to see is an uptick of opponents shooting at the rim, which yeah. you've seen, and an uptick from the corners, the two most efficient spots on the floor to score from. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Hornets D is showing. You know, we're 14th in the league overall, but where we're bleeding from are the highest efficiency spots in the game. So let's see. At the rim, 25th in the NBA for field goal attempts at the rim. 39%. That's 25th in field goal percentage. I said that wrong. So it's a big problem, and it goes back like to the same thing with the offense. Is how do the Hornets score at the rim? I really don't know. Unless Kemba just gets to the foul line a lot more. How do they stop opponents at the rim? Well, they're not really going to be able to do that. They're going to have to keep the ball in front of them from the top, from the wing. Yeah. And they haven't been able to consistently do that either. Nick Batum, Jeremy Lamb, Miles Bridges, Marvin Williams, all these guys are players that are going to get beat off the bounce pretty regularly.
Yeah. Batum especially, too. I mean, Batum having a matchup especially. With wings and stuff. Yeah.
The only guy we have on this roster that really keep the ball in front is Kid Gilchrist, and he's out right now.
Yeah, that's a big – I don't think Cleveland going bonkers – against the Hornets was just like a random coincidence that it was the first game that MKG wasn't playing in. Like, not saying he wins that, you know, I don't think Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is worth, you know, 30 points in a basketball game, but just his defensive intensity and his aggression and his effort. I just don't think you're going to get suckered like that by a crappy Cavs team if you got MKG out there, you know, pushing the second unit.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, once again, we're understanding the value of MKG, which I feel like it's an annual tradition.
Yeah.
Unlike any others, when he goes down and the defense craters, you're just like, oh, well, here we go again.
What's good, y'all? This is your boy, Justin, a.k.a. Just Blaze, host of Above the Rim. And if you want a raw take on the NBA, Above the Rim is a show for you. With dope beats and entertaining guests each week, we offer a great new insight on all things NBA. You don't want to miss it. Find it on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and the Almighty Baller Network.
All right, let's jump into the games here. We'll start with the Philly game. Philadelphia game. Last Friday night, the Hornets lose in overtime, 133-132. This was all about Joel Embiid. I mean, just a dominant performance. Yeah. 42 points. 18 rebounds, 11 of 18 from the floor, 33.2 usage rate. I mean, it really all went through him.
He's Godzilla out there, dude. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
It's unbelievable. The Hornets really had no answer for him. He took 22 free throws.
Yeah,
in
that was
game.
Insane.
I mean, they had nothing for Embiid. A lot of help was coming, almost like you were explaining earlier, BG. The Hornets didn't do it earlier in the game, but you saw it more and more. You saw it in the fourth quarter quite a bit. Before the ball was even being thrown to Embiid in the block, the Hornets were shading literally to the outside of the paint of where he was going to catch it and just zoning behind the play. I mean, they had to come up with something, and they couldn't. Just a dominant performance for Embiid. So that's really where it started for Philly. You know, Dario Saric had a nice game, hit four threes.
Yeah, his Bon Voyage performance there too.
Yeah, his last game. Yeah, that's right. Saric and Rocco's last game.
Yeah.
In Philly, and they both had a great game. I mean, like I said, Saric hit four threes, and Covington. Oh, he only hit one.
His defense was awesome though. His defense was so good again as usual.
This is one of those games, and it's been both. Games against Philly, right, BG? We're like, Charlotte just has no answer for Joel Embiid. And again, this is why Bismack Biyombo, as he did in the first game, this is why he has to play some spot minutes, because number one, Cody Zeller's going to get in foul trouble guarding Embiid. And number two, Biz can just bang a little bit more effectively and make life a little bit harder on Embiid than Zeller can.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, it's one of those, you'd love to think, like, oh, could they get away with Marvin at the five? And they even tried that against Embiid at times in this game. But, I mean, come on. You can't ask Marvin to guard that monster down on the block. And I thought Embiid got some pretty friendly whistles, too, offensively. And obviously got away with a travel call that led to a pretty big three-pointer. But a couple things for Charlotte here. They shoot 48% at the rim, which is terrible, 15 of 31. Embiid, 4 blocks. Simmons, 3 blocks. Covington, 4 blocks. I mean, just a total dead zone for the Hornets at the rim. And as I said, I think on 2 episodes ago when we were talking about the first Philadelphia game, that's an unfriendly matchup for Kemba because of their size and length, and having it, like, always having Simmons or, you know, what was Covington, or, you know, it'll be Jimmy Butler now, having one of those guys on him at all times. And so I've got, these are Kemba statistics from the Philadelphia games this season. 20 of 60, 33% shooting, 38% effective shooting, 6 of 29 on three-pointers, under 21%, 3 of 20 on pull-up threes, 15%, and according to NBA.com matchup data, on possessions where he was guarded with, where Covington was the primary defender, Kemba, 8 of 21, 38% shooting, and 2 of 10 on three-pointers, 20% too. So, like, I just think that length is just, it's such an issue for, and Kemba still got, you know, it wasn't an efficient 30 points on 29 field goal attempts. He was 3 of 14 on threes. I just think, I mean, 9 assists, it's only 0 turnovers, pretty good. Like, he did some good things, but, yeah, like, I just think Philadelphia, this, at least the old iteration of the 76ers, was always a tough matchup. And one last thing on Embiid, too. Just what he and J.J. Redick do with their two-man game and their handoff action and the way they, you know, he screens for Redick and gets him open, and the way Redick's gravity can get Embiid good looks, too. Those guys, it's really tough to stop. It's impossible to switch. You can't have a small guy go on Embiid because he'll destroy him and get a foul. And, you know, Redick just never stops running. It's a tough two-man, you know, unit to defend if they have the ball or if they don't have the ball.
Yeah, no question. And Kemba struggled in this game. I'm glad you kind of laid out how much he struggled against Philly so far this season. In the fourth quarter and in overtime, he finally gets going. And Philly, you know, they really lost their focus on defense a few times on Walker. He heated up from the mid-range. He got to the rim a few times. He got to the foul line 5 for 5 in the fourth quarter and overtime. So during that range, he was 6 of 10 from the field, 2 of 5 from three, scored 19 points, was plus 11 for Charlotte. So, you know, it Captain Crunch time here. I mean, he really came through when it mattered and almost carried Charlotte over the finish line. But they did come up short. Where did I put my tab here? What else in this game? You brought up, I was going to bring up how much Charlotte struggled at the rim. You brought that up.
Yeah.
This was one of those games, and you get it from the Hornets every now and then, where they bombed from deep, right? And they got it from all kinds of different places. Willie Hernangómez hits 3 triples. Dwayne Bacon in the fourth quarter hits 2 huge triples. I think they were both in the fourth quarter.
He was great.
He was awesome. Kimball was just terrible early, but hits 2 really big threes in the fourth quarter in OT. Monk hit 2. He was 2 of 8 overall. Miles hit 1. I mean, it was a group effort. Marvin hit 1. And that, you know, the Hornets finished with, I think they made 16 threes in this game.
Yeah.
So, but this is back, like, this game versus the Cleveland game is, like, again, over relying on that shot. The Hornets took 37 threes. In this game against Philly, which usually you would say, yeah, that's great. But it just, they relied so much of their offense from that area. And then the Cleveland game, same thing. They almost take 40 threes.
Yeah.
But it's the opposite, you know, outcome where you only make 4 or 5 of them. So, you know, it's very reliant from that area. And then obviously on Kemba Walker and, you know, against a team like Philly with that kind of length, it's not a good game plan.
What, one more thing for Bismack for this game. Biz plays 5 minutes. Hornets are minus 11 in those 5 minutes with him on the court. He has four fouls, one turnover, and goes 1-2 from the free throw line. Like, this is almost where it's like, you know, I get that he can bang a little bit more, but it's I don't think it's worth the value lost everywhere else, on the court. And again, we talk about this, it feels like every other week, but like the clutch minutes for the Hornets were bad again. Charlotte now has 34 clutch minutes this season. They're minus 19 in those minutes, worst in the NBA. 26th in the NBA in clutch offensive efficiency, 24th in clutch defensive efficiency, 28th in clutch net rating, minus 22.7 points per 100 possessions. Dead last in clutch effective shooting, 35.3%. 18 of 60 from the field, 6 of 30 on threes in clutch minutes. Kemba, 9 of 27 from the field, 4 of 13. Monk, 3 of 8. Marvin, 0 of 4. Bridges, 1 of 5. Batum, 0 of 2. Also, Nick Batum only played 14 minutes in this game, too. So that was sort of notable. Very little Batum and only... 16 minutes for Batum and 14 minutes for Marvin Williams in this game, which were low numbers as well.
I mean, it's just unbelievable, right, BG? Like, it's the same story every year. The Hornets have a plus 5.3 net rating or differential, if you will. That's seventh best in the league. But here we go again. Their win differential rating, minus 2.3, by far the worst in the league.
Yeah.
They have a win expectancy over 82-game schedule. Right now, with their differential of 54 wins. 54 wins.
You guys think they'll get there? You think they'll get to 54 this year?
I think in the past, maybe we've been a little bit more like, it's just this team's just unlucky in clutch situations. But no, they're not unlucky. They just – you can't rely on a 5'8 guard to bail you out at the end of games. That is not a recipe for success, and that is why the Hornets struggle. It's not bad luck. It isn't. You know, it's just not. They don't have anybody else that can score the ball at the end of games. And not only that, they don't have anybody else. Well, Malik Monk, he's willing to. He just can't.
Yes.
Out of Malik Monk, they don't have anybody else that's even willing to try, and that is a problem, especially for a team in the cap situation this one is. It's kind of unbelievable to think about.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, like, it's supposed to be, like, they're paying, but I mean, we've talked about this too many times, but, like, they're paying Nick Batum $25 million. He's a wing, but it's never been his MO to be a guy that uses possessions in general, especially late in the game. And, it's all on Kemba. And again, it was insane to see in the Detroit game, the Pistons.
Yeah.
Trapping this guy when there wasn't even a screen being set. Like, they're just running an extra defender at him, being like, yes, we were happy to play. Like, as long as we are happy to play 3-on-4, as long as the guy we've eliminated is this one person, because we don't think any of you guys can beat us. Not one of you. And I do think it's a little bit of a problem, too, which is, like, you need to have MKG out there to be, because he's your best defender by far. And even though he's made strides offensively in at this new position, he's doing just fine. It's one less shooter to have out there, even though I know he's taken a couple token corner threes this year, which is nice. But like, it's that much easier still to trap Kemba when he's out there, you know?
Yeah, and the Hornets have trimmed the fat. You know, Borrego has trimmed the fat on that a little bit by just inserting MKG in there in, you know, smaller lineups, five out lineups. That helps the offense continue to run, and you still get the same output from him defensively. But when we're playing against a team like the one we're talking about, the Sixers, and Embiid's out there, you can't employ that lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So. Anyway, sorry, I cut you off. Keep going, BG.
No. I'd actually gotten to my conclusion there. It's just not going to get better. Like, this is what it is. Everyone's trying hard, and I'm sure this is a focus point for the team to be better in these leverage minutes. But they're a little hand tied. Like, they just don't have a ton of options, and. It's crazy, but like they probably need to play Tony Parker more in those clutch minutes next to Kemba. until I know it's a joke, right? But like until Lamb or Monk or Batum, you know, I wouldn't bank on any of those guys getting to this point where they can take over and be a dominant secondary guy in clutch minutes. Like until then, you know, they might need to ride with Parker a little bit more, which is crazy.
Let's do it. You know what? With Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid as the big three, when we go to that smaller five out lineup at the end of the games, let's just play 2-3 zone defense,
right,
and then try to slice them up on the offensive end. I mean, hell, why not? Because no other answer.
The zone's coming back in the NBA this year, man. I've seen
Cleveland ran it almost after every timeout other night.
The Brad Stevens and Quinn Snyder were running it last Friday in Salt Lake City too, when the Celtics and Jazz were playing. So. Maybe the Hornets need to bring that as well too.
Turn the clocks way back. Yeah.
Seriously.
The last thing I want to point out about this game, because I spent better half of my Saturday morning that somehow had free, hadn't had many of those recently, watching some Miles Bridges film, and I did a little Twitter thread on his defensive issues. Oh boy, and I remember watching film of his in the draft process and saying, man, this guy does not get in a stance. He does not try to move his feet, which he's definitely capable of. The ball just zooms by him very regularly. And when he's in space in like a help situation, you can pretty much forget it right now. It's not something that can improve. It's not something he can't learn. But Miles Bridges is thinking the game defensively on a very, very poor level, very low right now. And it's got to be a focus point for the coaching staff and the development of him. You know, he's given us highlights, but I was pretty committed to finding not the truth, but finding really what he's doing on the court right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good defensively at all, BG.
He had some bad moments against Cleveland too.
Yeah, he did.
In the first quarter early, he just left his dude alone in the corner. They hit a three, and then he got smoked on a drive to the bucket. And it's just like all the athleticism in the world, you know.
Doesn't know where he is on the court a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
He if he has to take one step away from his initial help position, he's almost like turning in circles if the ball gets swung. And that's an issue. It's an issue, and it's something to monitor for Miles. And he played a lot of minutes in this game against Philly. He played 28 minutes. So there was a lot to dig into. Marvin Williams only played 15 in this game with foul trouble, I believe. All right, let's move on from this game.
Yeah, we gotta keep it moving. We'll go through Detroit quickly here.
Yeah, sure. The Detroit game was another. It was a great one for Charlotte again. They bombed from deep. In this one, Kemba had it going a little bit earlier in the game. Didn't rely on him as much. He finished with 24 points. He was 9 of 17 from the floor, 2 of 5 from deep. 28% usage rate. I think that's a healthy mark for Kemba. Tony Parker, 33% usage rate in 28 minutes of this game. I mean, that's it. That's crazy right there. Yeah. He was 11 of 18. He's Sprite player of the game. I mean, come on. 11 of 18 from the floor, 24 points. For Tony Parker, easily his best game, I would say, as a Hornet. Hit some big shots down the stretch for Charlotte. They finished, I don't have it right in front of me, what they did from deep. But Miles Bridges hit 3 threes. Jeremy Lamb hit 4. Marvin Williams hit 3. I'm reading the wrong one. Jeremy Lamb hit 2. Marvin Williams hit 3. Tony Parker was 2 of 2. Batum hit 1. Kemba hit 2. And Willie, again, hit another one. So it's just a game that Charlotte had it going from deep. And they outshot the Pistons. BG, what would you take from this one?
Yeah, I mean, a hell of a shooting game for the Hornets. They basically almost go 50-40-90. 89% from the line, 39 from deep, 51 from the field overall, which was really good. Couple things. I thought the defense for Blake on Griffin was really good. I mean, he's been sort of a high usage monster for the Pistons this year, but just 4 of 16 from the field, 0 of 5 from deep. A couple turnovers, minus 19, only 10 points. And I think they clearly, they flustered him. And I would say, too, I mean, you could even see it. Like, he was in sort of his, bully mode where he's just kind of running around being a jerk to people. And I thought he had a cheap shot on Monk late in this game, too, that ended up getting him ejected. But, the Eastern Conference is so weird. You know, the Hornets sort of handle the Pistons with relative ease. And then the Pistons go out a couple nights later and beat the Toronto Raptors. So go figure with that one. I don't know. Good road win for the Hornets over a decent Pistons team. Yeah, good shooting game, and they did a good job on defending Blake. And I think when teams do that against Detroit this year, they're going to win a lot of games probably.
Yeah, agree. You know, Andre Drummond had a nice game for Detroit. I mean, I think this is just going to be a trend for Charlotte. Like, when they go up against the behemoth centers, those guys are going to dominate because the Hornets just don't really have a way to contain them. Drummond, 23 points, 22 rebounds in this game. Really took over. And his usage rate was high, 23.4. So the Pistons were going there. Yeah, consistently. You brought it up. Blake Griffin struggled 4 of 16. This is a good win for the Hornets. You know, it turned into a bit of a wash considering what they did in their next game at Cleveland. And the last thing I want to point out, BG, unless you said it and I missed it, an outlier for Charlotte in this game at the rim. They were 83.3%, by far their best game of the year shooting the ball from that close.
But they didn't take many.
Right? Yeah. So they took very little. Only 18% of their shots came at the rim. But they did convert when they got there.
Yeah.
And you brought up the point earlier about how much Detroit extended their defense to try to trap Kemba early. So they were bringing guys as far up the floor as they had to try to stop Kemba in his tracks, which is why the rim was so open in certain occasions.
Right. What did you say? What did you say Parker's usage rate was for this game again? Do you remember?
Yeah, Parker's usage rate was 33.1, led the team.
So I'm looking at fourth quarter usage. Tony Parker played 11 minutes in the fourth quarter with a usage rate of 33.3%. Kemba played 5.5 minutes, usage rate of 42%.
Unbelievable.
It's crazy. Nick Batum plays all 12 minutes, usage rate of under 4%. So there you go. There's Nick Batum, the $25 million man who uses one possession in the entire quarter.
Was that Richie that just laughed?
No, it's my buddy Rob who just got in town from Chicago here. Yeah. So, apologies. No, you're good.
Laughs with the rest of the Hornets family.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Good win for the Hornets here, I guess. But yeah. Nick Batum, just an interesting. And by the way, here we go, too. Tony Parker in the fourth quarter with a 43% assist rate as well, too. So, it was a turn back the clock night again for TP this season.
Well, he hit, the three he hit that I think made it maybe 1-11. It put the Hornets up by like 8, I think. Kemba gets trapped at the top without a ball screen coming. Parker catches it on the wing, and then I can't remember who was standing in the corner. But the guy, Parker's man came to trap. Kemba throws it to Parker. The guy guarding the guy in the wing, stunts a little bit at Parker. Parker kind of looks at him, is like, I don't really want to shoot this, but if you're not gonna come towards me, I'm going to. And then it took after about 2.5 seconds of a little staring contest, Parker fires it and drills it for a second three of the game. And yikes. That's not going to be there for the Hornets every game.
Just real quickly, Batum did a couple nice things in the fourth quarter. 3 defensive rebounds, 2 steals, an assist. But literally the one possession that Nick Batum used in the fourth quarter was a turnover. That was the only – no free throws, no field goal attempts, 1 turnover. It was a +2 in 12 minutes. So not ideal. But, they're making the best of what they got, I guess.
Oh, man. Yes. Yeah, I would say so. All right, on to the Cleveland game, the ugliest game, we'll try not to spend too much time on this one. This is one of the ugliest games, and dating back to Bobcats days.
Yeah, it was bad.
One of the ugliest games I have ever witnessed in Charlotte basketball history in the last 12 years. I mean, it was awful from the start. The Hornets finish, mind you, I'm using cleaning the glass stats, so they toss out a lot of garbage time. We only get 95-75.
right. It cut off halfway through the fourth quarter, right?
Right. And even at that stage, well, actually, the Hornets hit 2 threes. Frank Kaminsky's siding hit a 3, and Dwayne Bacon also hit a three in garbage time. So you can take those two threes out. Good Hornets God. Finished with an 89.3 offensive rating in this game. I went back and did some research, BG. In the last 3 years, it's the fourth worst. I actually thought it would be worse, but it's the fourth worst offensive showing for the Hornets in the past three seasons. And that came against the 27th ranked defense in the NBA, which is that is hard to wrap your mind around.
Pathetic. Pathetic showing.
It is, but
they were without Osmond and Decker and stuff too. Like that, was like the scrub team for the Cavs, and they just absolutely blitzed. Yeah, I mean the Hornets 37.5 effective shooting, only 6% turnover rate, so that's a cool thing. But they score under 0.9 points per possession. And you know, you were talking about this earlier too. Like, look, when the Hornets can't hit from deep, they can't score at the rim. Teams trap Kemba and they don't have like a secondary guy. The Hornets in this game, they get up, and there was some bad luck too. Like they took 23 wide open threes in this game, right? So that's
unbelievable.
That's a good number, but they hit just six of them. So 26%. Marvin 2 of 5. Malik Monk 0 of 2. Kemba 0 of 2. Batum 1 of 3. Parker 0 of 2. Lamb 0 of 2. Bridges 1 of 2. Hornets go just 7 of 31 on catch and shoot threes, you know, 22.5%. And they go 1 of 7 on 3-point attempts in the first 6 seconds of the shot clock, 14%. Like it was just, I mean, it's one of those things, like if they hit 12 of those 23 pointers, this is probably a different game, you know? But that was not the case. And it certainly led to them, a just ugly, ugly win. And it goes to show you too, like for the season, the Hornets have actually been pretty good on wide open threes. Kemba 45%, Batum 48%, Lamb 48%, Bridges 47%. But here are the two like kickers on wide open threes this year. Marvin Williams 11 of 33, 33%, and Malik Monk 11 of 32, 34%. Like those are the two guys, like they're out, like those guys, their best skill is their ability to catch and shoot from threes. And they got to be able to hit more than a third of them. They've got to get closer when they're wide open to hitting 40%. It just has to, like it has to happen.
Marvin and Monk are they're looking after their brother that's not out there on the court with them, Frank Kaminsky, this season on the wide open threes. I mean, they are representing him in a really patriotic manner. Right? It's pretty amazing what we've seen from them. But no, and I don't think you said this stat, but I just saw it a minute ago and I have to share it. On non-corner threes for the Hornets in this game, 1 of 27. 1 of 27. BG, Richie, if you're sitting there, if you blindfolded us and asked us to take 27 threes from above the break, we could make more than one. I'm pretty certain of that.
Yeah, I mean, the only team I can think that would be envious of that shooting performance would be the Houston Rockets in Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals, right? And then they missed 27 straight threes.
That's right, 27 straight, yep.
Obviously not all from above the break, but 1 of 27 is, I mean, again, like, this performance was, it was a bit of an anomaly, but like, they were so bad defensively that it's tough to just sort of just chalk it up to a bad shooting night.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Part of this definitely is an anomaly. I mean, if you just watch the game, you could, as many open shots as Charlotte missed, you're just like, all right, some of this is a little bit wonky. But yeah, I mean, defensively, there's no excuse against a Cavs team that is one of the worst offensive teams in the league. Yeah. One thing that I noted that has nothing to do with statistics, and it's just, this was the worst body language I've seen from Kemba Walker in a while. He was very, very defeated. He was not trying defensively, you know, like you're used to from Kemba. He didn't look like he had his legs under him. You know, this was not a back-to-back for Charlotte. They played Sunday afternoon in Detroit, so they had a few extra hours of rest opposed to if they would have had to play Sunday night. Turn around and play Tuesday night. But it's just a really, really weird game for the Hornets. And I tweeted this out right after the game. It will be extremely interesting with the stretch that Charlotte has coming up against Philly, Indiana, and Boston. It will be very interesting how they respond or how they don't respond after this performance, because there's no other way to slice it. This was embarrassing.
Yep. Yeah, it was bad. It was a bad look. And like you said, they're going into some really tough games. I mean, look, not only they have those three games at home and they're all against teams that are playoff teams and teams that could win, you know, 50 plus games. But look, it's not going to get any easier for the Hornets, too, because in terms of like defensive efficiency, Boston's number one in the NBA. When they go back on the road after Thanksgiving on the 23rd of November, they play at Oklahoma City, the number two defense. Now, obviously, look, Philly's more to the middle. They're like 16th in defensive efficiency, but you know that team's better on that defensively, and they've had Charlotte's numbers for some of the stuff they're trying to do this year. Like, it's they're playing against good teams. Indiana's a top 10 defense, too. Like, these next four games for the Hornets, man, like, it's going to be really tough, and they're going to have to get better shooting from Malik and Marvin, and Kemba's got to have some bounce back games here too.
The one bright spot for Charlotte in this game is Jeremy Lamb. 26.8 usage percentage, did not lead the team. Malik did, but we're not going to talk about him in this game. Lamb finished with 22 points, 8 of 16 from the floor, 1 of 4 from deep. You know, he's the one guy that stayed steady through the storm in this game. He was good from the mid-range. You know, he hit that 1-3, got to the rim a few times. He kept the Hornets alive, honestly. Where they would have been without Lamb, I'm not sure they would really even come out of Cleveland. We would have just buried him there. So Lamb, a good performance for him. I think that's his highest usage rate of the season. If it's not, it's up there.
What did you think real quickly about Cody Zeller's defensive performance in this game? Not great, right?
Well, here's the thing, BG. Like, I went and I have him right here, and I didn't know if we were going to get to talking about him or not, so I'm glad you brought it up. His numbers, like, aren't awful.
No, they're not.
The team is not great. The team's a little worse with him on the floor offensively.
Yeah.
But opponents are much worse. Minus 3.5 net when he's on the floor. You know, so his net is 1.6 when he's on. What I'm seeing on my television screen and what the stats are telling me are not matching up.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those situations, BG, where and I know you asked me about this game specifically, but I'm trying to crack. I feel like it's a mystery. What Cody Zeller has been this year, I feel like is not a winning player. But a lot of the statistics are looking very similar.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this. I think defensively he's lost in a lot of situations, and I think a lot of that has to do with how much he's being asked to switch.
Yeah.
You saw that, you know, I tweeted out this clip the other night of JR coming off a very simple pin down stagger. You know, Batum talks to no one, like he never does. So look, Marvin,
you and I know it by now.
He's not going to talk to you. He's not going to tell you a screen's coming. So just you got to have your head on the swivel. And it's a stagger screen, so Cody's guarding the top guy on the stagger screen. He doesn't switch. Marvin tries to, but it's too late. It came in a moment where the Hornets were trying to make a run. I think when you ask Cody Zeller, a player that only played for Steve Clifford, a coach that never switched, right, even in clutch situations, he knew what his coverages were. If he needed to hedge hard, he could, and sprint back. If he needed to sit low and play goalie, so to speak, he could and do what he could at the rim. To ask this guy now to switch regularly, I think it's difficult for him. And I think that although the numbers don't tell you he's really struggling defensively, I think he is. I really do. And I think it's coming in inopportune moments.
Yeah. I'll say this too. I think some of just the very, you know, it'd be interesting to look at some of the more, like, the deeper stuff, some of, like, the, you know, I don't have RPM or some of these other ones that factor in for, you know, who's on the court with you and, you know, who's on the court against you. But one of the things that does help Zeller with his on off stuff is, like, you know, he's played, you know, basically 320 minutes this season. 294 of those have been with Kemba Walker. That'll help you. That'll prop up your on off splits pretty quickly, you know, when you're playing with that guy, despite, you know, that he's had some shooting troubles recently too. But, like, yeah, the play you're talking about with J.R. Smith is, I think we both were sort of talking about it the other night during the game. Like, he was just such a, you either got to be switching and rotating on a string, or there's just got to be better communication. You just can't have J.R. loafing into a catch and shoot three with no one in his airspace. Like that, it's just that was when I think of that game, that play jumps out more than any other one because it showed a pretty serious lack of communication or effort. Do you know what I mean? Just that's not something that I expect from Zeller. And like the three guys involved in that exchange were Batum, Marvin Williams, and Cody Zeller. And some of those guys are excellent hustle people, excellent hustle guys, excellent communicators. And man, it was just crazy to see them just completely drop the ball on that one exchange.
Yeah. You know, so I don't know if we should chalk this up with guys like Marvin, who's looked a lot the same way, BG, I think, in terms of confusion at times defensively, and Cody, if we should chalk this up to, hey, look, these guys are getting, you know, used to a new system, and it's going to take, you know, 40 games to really feel comfortable in it, be communicating in it, or if these are players, they're just going to struggle in these kind of, in this scheme. And it would surprise me if they struggled in this scheme, because Cody Zeller and Marvin Williams, especially Marvin Williams, strike me both as smart basketball players.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, exactly.
And so I would think that they would be able to think their way through this scheme a little bit more seamlessly than they have. So it's something to watch. Cody Zeller, though, just in general, has looked like a minus basketball player.
Yeah.
This season so far to me. I mean, I'm ready to have the Willie Hernan Gomez conversation should he be in the starting lineup. I don't know if I'm ready to watch him play defense, but I'm ready to listen to the people that want to say he should be starting over Cody because he's just not bringing what he has in the past to the Hornets.
I'll say this too. It's you know, they probably don't want to overtax it, but they've played a fair amount of minutes with Marvin at center, and it's been very good. Now, I know some matchups that's going to be basically, you know, if you're playing in the Sixers and Embiid, it's basically a no-go. But they've got a net rating that's like hovering close to plus 20 with like close to 80 minutes of Marvin at the five. One last thing, I do want to spit these numbers out real quickly because I do think, yeah, look, Kemba's seen some pretty serious defensive attention and he's been struggling in recent games. But some of it, like, he's gotten some good looks too. But yeah, the last three games for Kemba, 6 of 26 on threes, 37% effective shooting, 6 of 24 from above the break, 25%, like that's got to be closer to 40. 3 of 10 in the restricted area, 0 of 11 on catch and shoot attempts. I mean, that again, that's sort of just like bad luck to an extent. And 3 of 12 on wide open three-point attempts, which, like, I mean, come on, he's a much better. He's closer to 50%, you know. So they've had some bad luck too, but last number set I want to run through here too, because this sort of goes into the lack of a secondary creator. Last three games on drives, Kemba, 8 of 20 shooting, Malik Monk, 0 of 7, Tony Parker, 6 of 12, Jeremy Lamb, 3 of 14, Nick Batum, 1 of 4. So, like, you see the lack of volume with Nick Batum driving to the basket, and you see, you know, Kemba and Tony Parker with 32 field goal attempts on drives the last three games, and no one else anywhere close to that. So, yeah, it's a problem. It's a problem.
As we've discussed a lot in the episode, you know, is it fixable for the Hornets? Is it going to take someone else not on this roster currently to come in, or which is, you know, the Hornets are going to have a hard time doing that for all the reasons we've mentioned, or someone else going to step up, Malik Monk, Nick Batum, somebody going to come out of their shell here. All right. Well, I think that's pretty good. We covered a lot in this episode, unpacked a lot. Real quickly before we go, just running through slow housekeeping here. Let's run through the upcoming schedule for the Hornets Saturday. You'll probably hear this episode on a Friday. You might hear it on a Saturday morning. They host Philly Saturday night, the third game against the Sixers this season. They host Boston Monday night, and then they host Indiana next Wednesday night. So all three of those games are at home. And then next Friday, they're at Oklahoma City, and then the Sunday they're at Atlanta. So that takes you through next week. Next week is Thanksgiving, so I'm not 100% sure you're going to hear from us. We might skip a week and pick back up a few weeks from now.
Yep.
So a lot of basketball between now and then. Very tough stretch for the Hornets coming up. I mean, if they get two of these next four, I think you got to feel good.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. That's like best case scenario, I think, in terms of what's, you know, sort of in the realm of possibility.
No doubt. BG, good stuff as always. We will see you. Have a great Thanksgiving. Probably won't do an episode next week. I'm sure we'll talk. And then Richie, if you're back there, yep, you are. I see you. Have a great Thanksgiving. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate all the listeners. We're off to another great start in terms of listens this year. Tell a friend if you know somebody looking for a Hornets podcast out there. Yeah, go ahead, BG.
Just who was the guy that tweeted us this morning that had the BuzzBeat logo?
Can we
pull that up and give that dude a quick shout out?
Yes, I will pull that up. And also, hold on, it'll take me 3 seconds. All right, so Nico at @sarcastic_asset. He tweeted a picture of himself starting my morning coffee. My morning off, right, with some coffee at BuzzBeat Radio, has on his coffee mug there has the BuzzBeat sticker that he won. Yeah,
we appreciate that, man. That's cool.
That is really, really cool. That's one of the coolest things anybody's tweeted us. It's like, that's when it's like a visual effect. Like, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
People, like, these aren't just numbers I look at on the screen. People actually do listen to us, and we reach other folks. So, and Richie does a great job of running those contests. Those stickers are really, really cool. You can slap them on a laptop, coffee mug, like Nico did. So they're really cool. We'll do those giveaways, you know, every few weeks. So keep your eyes out for that. Mm-hmm. And if you don't follow us, give us a follow on Twitter, BuzzBeat, at BuzzBeat on Twitter. All right, boys, good stuff as always. Like I said, have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll catch you guys at episode 80. Don't forget, we are a proud member of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network and home at queencityhoops.com and our good friends over at Sports Channel 8. We're getting ready to head full steam ahead into college basketball season and conference play before we know it here. So make sure you are following at Sports Channel, the number 8 on Twitter, and check them out, sportschannel8.com on the internet. All right, that was episode 79. Until next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.